Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we look at environmental damage in connection with climate engineering. As we've covered in past shows, climate scientists have been broadcasting the message to mainstream media that climate engineering would be a necessary option, and implying that these programs are not being done in real time. Well, that's not true. In fact, there's a mountain of evidence and data that various types of large-scale geoengineering have been deployed for the last 20 years or more. We have two guests, Corey Gunnels, an anti-geoengineering activist who witnessed a low-flying military aircraft releasing 20 to 50-foot filaments over a civilian population in Arizona. The story made international headlines across the second-net alternative mainstream media. But first, we're joined by Alan Buckman, a former California State Department of Fish and Wildlife biologist. He's also a trained U.S. Air Force weather observer who worked in the military for 5 years, mainly at Beale Air Force Base. And he worked with NASA, RCA, and the U.S. Navy on the TIRAS-3 weather satellite readout team. Alan Buckman is familiar with cloud observation, jet contrails, the military, and space-based weather information systems. We talk with Alan about the damage to forests caused by the climate engineering toxic fallout, specifically from the deployment of metals in the sky that rain out into the environment. This isn't news, but there is a well-funded, active disinformation campaign by the military and corporations designed to keep the public confused on these topics, and it's important to relay the true destruction related to these operations. Alan Buckman was on the show 7 years ago. He joins us right now. Alan, welcome back to In Other News.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we've had a number of calls in recent weeks when we do open lines here on the show, and the individuals are concerned about large trees that they see toppled in the forest as they're driving around upstate New York. We often relate this to climate engineering, but the evidence is very difficult to show and reveal, and there are a number of reasons for that. But this is an area that you've looked at and researched, and could you tell listeners what you found out?
Sure. What I found out is that with a combination of really high ultraviolet, it's like 1,200 times normal, and local tests with the metals, and then the trees, almost all of the trees that we've been seeing are burned, which means it's coming from a high UV levels. Now, the question of high UV levels and the potential for all of these metals to be in the soil. Most plants, when you put them under stress like this, and it's obvious they're under stress, you'll start getting bark beetles because they have little antennae on their heads that pick up the infrared, and they can see it. So they know when a tree is stressed, and that's generally when you get beetle invasion. It's also the pathway for mold, mildew, and fungus. And that stress on the trees could very easily have produced root rot, especially on the old trees. Now, there's a potential here for a whole number of different interacting situations. If you have trees that have been stressed with, say, like solar burning, and that aluminum and these other metals, which we are finding is incredibly high, some of them are in millions times higher than anything that should be. And myself, I've been testing lichens, you know, off the trees, and we're getting, you know, anywhere from 31,000 parts per million to almost 11,000 parts per million of just aluminum.
What do you attribute this excess aluminum to? A lot of the anti-geoengineering activists who have done the soil and water samples where the aluminum and barium and strontium shows up, a lot of people say that these elements, these metals, aren't naturally occurring. The connection is made, especially with the patents that we see that show that aluminum oxide, barium oxide, and these metals are suspected in being used in these geoengineering operations. Is there any more evidence that we can add in here as to attribute this high level of aluminum in trees and plants?
I think so. You know, I selected lichens because lichens, you know, they're not parasitic. They get all of their nutrients from the air in either rain or snow or out of the air itself. And when you start having incredibly high levels of aluminum in lichens, it means it's coming from the air. So this isn't a ground-based test here. It's a it's an air-based test. And whatever they're finding in the air, quite frankly, most of the air tests I've seen, they haven't been testing for metals for the most part. At least most of the agencies, nobody's testing for all this stuff. But it's almost proof positive in my biological mind that whatever is coming down on the lichens has to be coming from the air. The only thing that we see going on overhead are the jet clouds in the spring, which has been obvious to me, you know, from the beginning. I was a weatherman in the United States Air Force, and I know what contrails are, and I know what jet clouds are, and they are really different. We used to have normal fronts come in that would be preceded by series of very specific cloud types. You know, the elevations, warm fronts have, you know, tend to bring up thunderstorms. The cold fronts tend to bring in a lot of stratiform. But overall, we're getting striped skies now and combinations of clouds that we've never seen before. Most of the sky I'm looking at aren't natural. So I'm convinced, personally, that this is a spray job. I really have no doubt. And the lichen testing tells me that, yes, whatever it is coming out of the air. Now, as far as the trees in New York, I'd be really curious. I don't know what kind of testing have been done on those trees, but they should be able to test the soils for metals. You probably find fungus, which would, you know, come on with the stress, and the fungus or root rot is could be amylaria, like mushrooms, which is one of the fungus that comes in on tree roots, you know, when the trees are rotting. So I'm guessing that it's the stress from the aluminum and from the high UV and from the fungus and then the pH, which also needs to be tested. But I'd like to see somebody go in there and evaluate those trees and do metal testing at the same time. And if they've got lichens, take lichen samples off of those and test those. So I don't know enough about the situation there. I'm making an educated guess about what could be there, but somebody really needs to check it.
The pH balance is interesting. An acidic soil will create a proliferation of fungus.
The aluminum is making everything more basic, but there are different kinds of fungus, and if it's not amylaria, it could be another fungus, and not all fungus are the same. It's a pretty wide, you know, even with the changes in the weather, and were we to have a total ecological collapse, there would still be surviving species. Generally, those tend to be the pathogenic types that would survive. But there would be a big shift in the ecosystem, which is what my concern is, because these metals accumulating in the soil are going to change your microclimate for all your microbial stuff, species. And when you do that, you're disrupting the entire chain of life, going all the way up from which microbes are functioning and how they interact with the trees and all the other things that are going on with it. Yes, it's complicated. However, just my weather experience, I can see the cloud spraying going on. And from the lichen test, I'm certain that it's the metals are coming from the air and they're being sprayed on us. So that's pretty much my opinion of it.
Your research in on the West Coast with trees that are undergoing the same type of stress, what have you evaluated in terms of the health of ecosystems and specifically large trees tipping over?
I haven't done a lot of investigation on that. I've been attempting to get funding to pay for the tests. They get pretty expensive. Now, we have somebody out there that wants to disprove it. They probably ought to put some money forward to evaluating what's really going on. So I wish I could say more about that, but I haven't been doing that kind of research.
Alan, can you give listeners some of your background as a biologist?
Okay, I was a wildlife biologist with the California Department of Fish. It used to be Fish and Game. It's now Fish and Wildlife. And I was a field biologist for about 38 years. Now, in most of my work, I was doing evaluations of projects, and for mostly macro species, the large species, dealing with deer and antelope and elk and other species, birds, and, you know, our surveys went that far. So most of my surveying was on the megafauna. I wasn't doing water, and I wasn't doing soil and those kinds of tests. So what I did was go look at projects to see if in a broader environmental sense that they made sense. Are you into wetlands? Are you into endangered species? You know, what's the situation? And then I would always try, if I could, to go for a win-win situation with the developers. So I spent a whole lot of my time doing that. And I wasn't doing the lab work.
Can you tell listeners about how you started becoming aware of the climate engineering operations and then the fallout and subsequent damage on the environment?
Okay, well, as I was doing my environmental evaluations, I started getting concerned at all the dying trees. We had dying trees everywhere. And it looked like burning, and burning when it happens, or even freezing. They have similar effects on the trees in that you get, you know, partial die-off, and then you'll get some recovery. Well, that's kind of what's been going on. We'd have partial burning, and then we'd have partial recovery, and then we'd have partial burning. And over time, what the vegetation has been doing, it would start to regrow, and it did clump. And there are some biological terms for that, but it was obvious that a whole lot of the trees were even more susceptible and died right on the spot. Others have been, you know, going slowly. And you could look at the canopies. You get huge canopy reductions. Every time it happened, there'd be more of a canopy reduction. And something they called lion tailing, where you have a little bit of vegetation out on the end of a naked branch. That's really common, and it's still going on. So I'm still watching some of the trees die off right away. Some of them really try to recover. And basically the geoengineering scientists that I've been hearing have been saying that, in fact, there's been some admittance to the fact of the spraying. But they say, well, if that's what's going on, then we are afraid to stop it because there'll be a total collapse for whatever they're supposedly protecting us from. That just can't be the case.
We've had Dane Wigington on, and I know you were recently on a panel with Dane Wigington and others. He mentions that if they stop, then there might be a violent reaction. However, that needs to occur anyway. So there's a reset, and then hurricanes can stop being suppressed because that naturally cleans the atmosphere.
You know, if we were to stop it, that would include stopping HARP and pushing the jet stream around. And that's all part of the big part of the problem. All that cold air coming down the East Coast right now, there's a very interesting site that I've been watching, and it has to do with HARP awareness. It basically shows, and it certainly seems that what the discussion is correct, and that is that they've located some other HARP, several large arrays on a little island off the coast of Baja, and they were breaking the storms up right over the coast of California and pushing the jet stream north. And when the jet stream went north, goes north, in fact, I heard this before this all came down, as it just started. When the jet stream went north, it picked up that cold air and it turned and it dropped it right down the East Coast. Sure enough, that's what happened. What we have to do is stop the HARP, and we have to get them to stop pushing the jet stream around. And then you have to ask the question, well, aside from some intentional population reduction program, what is going on? It's hard, you know, sorting out the truth from the lies. There's a huge amount of lie, but then there's also a little truth thrown in, which is, you know, that's classic misinformation. You know, part of it, I have no idea what the answers are. other than I'm really of the conviction that we need to stop the HARP and moving the jet stream around. And we probably are going to have that same thing happen with all the other countries and places that are using HARP. Now, are the same people behind all of it? You know, possibly. Because, you know, corporations are international, and I don't think there should be any doubt whatsoever that corporations are involved in what's going on with all this. I mean, how did Monsanto know that we needed to develop aluminum-resistant plants? The main question, well, they're part of the military-industrial complex. They've been doing contracts with the Navy and the Air Force and the government. The government, I'll put that in quotes, because it's only a part of the government that's the problem. I do know that there's a lot of really good people out there working for all these same agencies that have these bad apples in it that are really directing everything. It seems more and more obvious all the time that that's what's going on.
Alan, you were part of this panel on geoengineering in California.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Alan?
Hello?
Can you?
Hello? Am I talking to myself?
No, Alan, I'm right here. Can you hear me? Alan.
Hello.
That's great. Alan, listeners, this is a corded line. We reached Alan Buckman on a corded line, and he should have been able to hear me without a problem. I'm going to call him back.
We tried this again.
What happened with the phone connection?
Well, I don't know. It was really interesting. My phone just went dead. On this side, I couldn't receive anything, and it's a brand new phone, you know. So I had no idea what just happened with that. It was interesting. We got cut off right when I did. But
I asked you about the geoengineering event that you were recently a part of. Can you tell listeners what that was about?
Well, basically, it was to get together as an awareness program for people, just to bring them information about what we were finding, and that there was good reason to be concerned about what we're finding. Again, all these tests, if people don't believe it, they can go out and start doing some testing. In fact, I recommend it highly. The doubters will try to prove us wrong, and I think you'll prove us right. So anyway, you asked me earlier how I got involved in this, and as I was doing my work for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, I was noticing all the dead trees and other shrubs and the invasion of fungus. That's when the sudden oak death fungus started across the coastal areas here in California. And I thought, well, you know, you don't normally get an outbreak of fungus like that or a virus unless everything's in stress, because, you know, as I said earlier, you got beetles and fungus and other things that invade when the trees are in stress. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, if my friend Rosalind Peterson gave me a video and asked me what I thought about it, because I have been a weatherman in the Air Force, and it didn't take me very long into the video to realize that indeed it's a spraying program. I mean, the cloud types. I'm watching jets go over, leaving, and they're not contrails because contrails don't stay in the sky, leaving the spray in long stripes. And I thought, that's not normal. And then the cloud types that came from those stripes were variable. So they were using different cloud-forming nuclei in the different stripes, which was also obvious to me. And, I don't understand how any weatherman can go out and look at those clouds and watch those clouds come in and not know that it's a spray job. That just boggles my mind. Everybody else can see it. Go out there and see it. All you have to do is know the difference between contrails and chemtrails. Well, I didn't call them chemtrails, frankly, but it doesn't really matter what you call them. Mm-hmm. It's just they're clouds made by jet spraying. I don't want to get into the argument with the technicalities of people in terminology here. It's ridiculous, because mm-hmm. every time we start to use one word, the scientists that would be chemtrail scientists are basically telling us what we ought to be doing, and they're denying what we are doing. That's also ridiculous. As I looked at all that, I thought, well, where is all this stuff coming out of these planes landing? What is it doing to the vegetation? Ecologically, I was concerned immediately. If you're going to be putting a high-thin cirrus over us every day, you're changing the normal weather patterns. And any time we change a normal weather pattern, we're disrupting all of the life forms below or on the planet, because this is planet-wide. I know Germany already fessed up to the fact that it's an ongoing program. They did that some time ago. And others have been saying it, too. So we're not alone in what we're saying here. We're just trying to wave a red flag to people going, look, we're being subjected to some situations here that they're not sharing with us the real why of they're doing it. In fact, what we're getting is denial. Well, why would they deny that? I mean, is there some terrible disaster coming they don't want to talk about, which is kind of what they want us to think, even though they're still denying. So it's a complicated situation until you really start following all this stuff and realize there's a huge number of lies going on out there from our supposed government and our representatives. And as I talked to the congressional people, no one seemed to know about it. And yet I happened to find out that they all heard Dennis Kucinich, when he was doing the Space Act program, talk about chemtrails and HARP. They didn't call it HARP. It was electromagnetic weapons. And they were combined together in that act as weather warfare and for changing the climate. I mean, we used that stuff in Vietnam. We rained out the Ho Chi Minh Trail with the same technology. And that was back in the 50s and 60s. So they've had this for a long time, and they've been doing it for a long time. Again, I just wasn't paying attention because I was looking at other things.
What do you think, if there's a critical mass among the citizens of the world about these operations and the subsequent environmental fallout, that there might be an effort to put an end to it, or is it game over?
I don't think it's game over, because I really believe, even though I've been extremely concerned about all the life on the planet, the Earth and the species are pretty resilient. Now, they just can't kill it all off. And things pop back. It's like whatever happened to the dinosaurs. The mammals were underground, small mammals, and they popped out and became the next major terrestrial species. So, no, I don't think it's too late, which is, you know, what I was getting to, is that we need to get a grip on what's actually going on. I think it's really time for some truth in what's happening here. And it's time for us to get a grip on these. Excuse me, but I think they're criminals that are doing this without telling any of us what's going on. what's the old saying? You know, I feel like a mushroom, you know, that they're just feeding us crap. I particularly like Ted Gunderson's comment when he called it air crap. And for those of you that don't know, Ted Gunderson was a director of the Los Angeles division of the FBI. And he made some very strong statements about the chemtrails being a toxic dump and that they're really trying to do population control. And I believe Ted. And incidentally, I heard recently that Ted was poisoned, that he's not with us any longer. So, and there's been a lot of people that have died. There's been a lot of people that working for the major networks that have been fired because they brought it up. There's a long list of those, and I ran into references from weather people all over the United States who have given testimony to the fact of the program and been ignored. So you're either called names or you're ignored, and I was surprised to learn that I was a conspiracy theorist. I don't think it's a theory, but are you with me still?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I'm right here.
Oh, not again. I can't hear you.
This is very odd. I'm going to try to call you back.
I can't hear you.
I called Alan back on his cell phone. We're going to wrap up the interview. But before we do that, Alan, what did you experience in this interruption?
My phone just went dead. And I clicked the receiver here up and down a few times just to see it. And I didn't have any dial tone hung up. You called back, it rang once, and then went dead again. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on. That's very strange, especially when I'm talking about the bad guys in the government.
I don't even know what use it is to cut the interview off when it's almost over. And so it's not really useful. It's going to get done anyway, if indeed that's what this is.
I would like for all the listeners to hear that if you have any doubts about this, information, please do some testing. Hire somebody to do some testing if you can't. Find out what your aluminum accumulations are. And actually, it was a few other the other metals, and I think you've already heard a good part of that. But if this is a fact, it's true. I didn't really want to go this far down any rabbit hole, and it goes a lot further than you think. It's a lot more than just weather manipulation. It looks like a small group of people who are trying to take away our entire country. And if you look at Citizens United, the other decisions that have been made, it's corporate. And both Eisenhower and Kennedy warned us about this. In fact, there's a really good book that is about Kennedy, and it's Kennedy's Last Stand. And you all ought to pick up a copy and read it, because it talks about the creation of the CIA and MJ-12 and the whole alien issue, which is wrapped up in all of this. I don't want to go too far off into that, but it's a fact. And people need to wake up, that's all. And again, I had no intention of doing any of this. I was happy as a biologist. I was happy retired. I was sorry to find out what kind of condition that we're really in. And I am concerned, and you ought to be concerned, all of you. So, again, you don't have to believe me. Start looking, start investigating this, and because now Dane Wigington has a heck of a lot of data on his site. You all need to go and have a look at that and trust it.
That website is geoengineeringwatch.org.
We are basically patriots, and we are not lying. You know, again, I didn't want to know all this stuff, but here we are. So if you have doubts, go test.
Alan, you're working on a project to get some tests done on the lichen in your area. Can you tell listeners what you need?
And trying to resolve a lot of the questions about the spraying program, which I know for a fact exists, what I would like to do is to be able to expand our sampling on the lichens throughout the Bay Area and larger areas if we can. But we are short. I'm short of funding. I can't afford to do it. And if there's anybody out there who has any funding whatsoever, we figured for about 50 tests, which would cover maybe four Bay Area counties, it's going to cost about $5,500. It's not a huge amount of money, but again, I don't have it. So I'll put out an appeal to you. If you can help, you can reach me at my email address at 7dog, and that's a number 7, at sbcglobal.net. And again, I'm Alan Buckman, and we'd appreciate any kind of assistance we can get. And if you want to fund more than that or are able to, give me a communication, and then let's talk some more. So anyway, if you're out there, I'll thank you ahead of time. Thank you very much, because this is really serious stuff. And if there's any other information you need from me, I'll try to provide you with whatever I can.
Okay, listeners, an appeal to fund testing of lichens for metals such as aluminum, showing evidence of climate engineering raining out on the ground, but coming from the air, not naturally occurring in the soil. Alan Buckman, thank you very much for being on In Other News.
Oh, thank you.
We'll be right back.
Corey Gunnels is an anti-geoengineering activist living in Prescott, Arizona, who witnessed and photographed a low-flying C-130 military plane being followed closely by two smaller aircraft. Shortly, the sky filled with long filaments that rained out on her property and the community. Corey and her neighbor, Marie Snow, collected samples and then alerted local environmental agencies, politicians, and nearby airports. After the media reported on her story, Corey received more accounts from others around the country describing the same types of long fibrous filaments raining down onto the surface. Corey joins us now to tell us about what happened on that day in November of 2014. Corey, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
Last November, you witnessed a procession of military aircraft flying pretty low over your property in Prescott, Arizona. The story blew up in mainstream alternative news, but let's go over what happened.
Sure. It was a situation where I happened to be in the right place at the right time, meaning I was outside and had my cell phone in my hand. I had just finished a phone call, and I heard the sound of jet aircraft that was unusual. It was very loud and not something I was accustomed to hearing. I looked up and saw a very large military plane that was immediately followed by two other planes. And I've since learned that was a C-130. And on its tail, it was the configuration that was also very unusual. It was these three planes were together at a low elevation. It was a C-130, followed by a Lear 35, followed by a C-12 Huron. And I clicked my phone to camera and tried to get a shot, and luckily I was able to. I didn't have time to focus or zoom. And I went inside, called a friend of mine that lives in the direction that the planes were headed, and asked her if she could please go outside and, you know, to see if she could spot them as well. And I reached her. She did, and we were conversing on the phone. All of a sudden, you know, she was saying, oh my gosh, you know, can you see that? And I had no idea what she was talking about right at that moment. And she said, it looks like there are 50-foot-long raindrops just coming straight down over me. I still couldn't see that, but within a couple minutes, because of the prevailing wind, I'm about 8 miles to southwest. My sky literally filled with long, shimmering webs. And that's kind of where the story started. Both of us are... There's a little irony in it. Both of us are, and have been for years, anti-geoengineering activists.
Mm, very interesting.
Right. So we, you know, there were some things we knew we needed to do. One, the first thing was to call the EPA right away and file a report. And I did that, and I did reach a woman. And the EPA is divided into regions, and our region is Region 9. With the headquarters in San Francisco. And so when I called the EPA to file a report, the woman said, because this is happening in real time, and I'm in San Francisco and you're in Arizona, I want you to call someone closer. And she gave me the phone number for Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. And she gave me an internal number as well as the main number in case, you know, I needed a backup. So I did call. I didn't reach anybody in person, but I filed an online complaint report. Within about a week, I did receive an email of confirmation and a case number from them.
Tell us exactly how you collected samples. What did it look like? Where were they?
Sure. My friend, her name is Marie Snow, she collected samples, one, just straight from the air. She rolled up a piece of paper, just kind of swirled these webs around and around and around and around the paper. The webs or the filaments were so long and that she said she could have stood there for a long time. She actually had to break the filament, which is stronger than a spider web, in order to stop. Then the other thing we did is collected material from the vegetation. And with that, we just used a piece of nature, you know, that it was on, like a stick. It's really difficult to gather a sample of this because it's, you know, from the air, it's in a long, you know, 10, 20 foot long strand floating. On vegetation, it's extremely sticky. It wants to clump up. So that was the collection. And then what I actually did was to send it, I went to a veterinarian and got a sterile sample jar and put it in that and then sent it to the lab.
I see. Mm-hmm. What were the results?
This event happened on the 5th of November, 2014, and the samples were sent in shortly thereafter, and it takes about 10 days to get a report back. The report, we sent in two samples independently to a certified lab in California. I asked for the sample to be tested for aluminum and barium, and the results I received back, this is in a part per million or part per billion, and I'm sorry, I need to get that clarified. It's measured in a milligram per kilogram, that I'm sure of, and that's because it's a solid. The aluminum results were 1,020. The barium was 34.1, and strontium was 70.8.
Those are the metals that we often hear are in water and soil samples that are independently taken by geoengineering activists or concerned individuals around the country and around the world. Were there other metals or other ingredients in that?
When you submit a sample, you do need to request what you're looking for, because I'm sure the cost would be prohibitive to, you know, have hundreds of, you know, different things that they could test it for. So I'm not really sure, you know, if there are other things. There is another sample that's outstanding that's been sent for testing to check it for biologicals. You know, those three metals, the aluminum, barium, and strontium, are classic for geoengineering. They match patents. You know, we have like 150 patents for geoengineering. And, you know, there have been many, many rain, soil, snow, and blood tests that match these as well. And over time, you know, increase. So we know that the trajectory is going up in the contamination.
So you have the results back, but as far as alerting the media about this event, tell us what happened.
Well, Marie was very instrumental in that part of the story, and she contacted a number of media outlets, as well as 94 of our legislators here. The first callback came from a CBS affiliate, Channel 5 News in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're 100 miles north of Phoenix. I was a little bit hesitant to have them do a story because we know that the mainstream media often marginalizes stories like this. But I did have a long conversation with the assignment editor, and he assured me that, you know, he would do what he said was, quote, the straight story. So they did send a reporter, a photographer, to Prescott and also Chino Valley, which is where Marie lives, and they did a story. And they were offered to take a sample while Sue was with them. I wasn't with them that day during the interview. They didn't take a sample. They took a sample after the interview, after she left, and they took it to Grand Canyon University for testing, which is a small Christian college in Phoenix. I don't know why they chose that.
Grand Canyon University.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So the director of the laboratory there tested the material. She put it under a microscope with 40 times magnification, and she also submitted it to a test that uses infrared. And what that does is it's a comparative analysis where they look at the chemical signature under infrared and compare it to their database. And what she said, the results came, she said that this material, unusual, she admitted it was unusual and she'd never seen anything like it before. She said that that it tested for gluten, flour, and bacitracin.
Bacitracin?
Right. Hmm. So her conclusion was that these were, and I'm serious, quote, cattle bandages.
Cattle bandages. That was
That's
her.
Right. That's right. So what's interesting about that is that a sky, you know, to my knowledge, wouldn't fill with long 10 to 20 foot filament for an hour's time from cattle bandages. And the other thing that I did ask the assignment editor, his name is Scott Davis, I asked him to please hold the story until we had all the facts, until we had our laboratory tests back. And obviously he chose not to do that. In the story, one of the important things I believe that he omitted was that he told me during that week there were three independent eyewitness observers that called their station from Phoenix reporting that they saw the same, you know, the same material in the sky. And what's important about that is that we live in very different areas. Phoenix is a desert valley, and their elevation is a little over 1,000 feet. And we're a mountain area 100 miles north, and our elevation is a mile high. It's 5,400 plus feet. So our topography is entirely different. Our climate's different. We do have historic cattle ranches there. They don't. And the other thing is that when they did the story on the news, on the, you know, television, the journalist was standing, the reporter was standing in front of a green screen with a zoomed-in photograph of a cotton field. So right there, back to mainstream media marginalizing stories, that's predictive programming. You know, that's showing their audience this is what you're seeing.
Right, that's predictive programming, the power of suggestion right there on the television. But why would cattle bandages fall out of the sky? I don't understand that.
They wouldn't. And so, you know, what I've said since about, you know, first of all, I had hesitancy to even to be part of that story, you know, part of their story. But in a way, it's almost a gift in that it's such a prime example of what mainstream media does with stories like this. It is not the straight story. You know, in my opinion, there were so many errors, and they should have waited for, you know, more factual evidence. So it's another example of, you know, particularly when you're looking at geoengineering or something like that, they're not interested in reporting the truth.
Yes, we're in big trouble as far as the people in this country having an open discussion in the media about geoengineering, climate engineering. What we hear from these scientists is that geoengineering operations are an option in the future. They're not being done in real time, and a lot of people who are researching this see it being conducted in real time. Geoengineering is happening right now, but on the mainstream media, these scientists are broadcasting the message that it's not happening right now, and we might consider doing that in the future. So as an anti-geoengineering activist, you see this particular event occur where these aircraft are flying at a low altitude, but the other geoengineering operations, probably the solar radiation management, you see aircraft at a much higher altitude flying much faster and with longer trails that spread out and block the sun. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. If you notice when you watch the media right now, is that mainstream media is starting to report story about geoengineering, including using the term geoengineering. I think it was December 4th, Newsweek. It was on the cover of their magazine. But like you said, all of them are reporting that this is still theoretical, it's still only computer modeling, and so forth. But what they're doing is they're trying to condition the public to become familiar with these terms, and also they're conditioning the public to believe that it's a fix for climate change, for, you know, for warming, which is true. We're in trouble here. But what they're not admitting is that this has been going on for 60-plus years, and it's in large part causal to the problems that we're having. So the fix that they want to sell the public on is actually what they have used to cause our problem. There are other effects out there that are contributing to warming, but, you know, this clearly, what we tell people is, use your common sense. Look up. Are these skies that you see right now, are they the skies of your childhood? Absolutely not.
When you started getting this information out about this particular event that we're speaking about, did you have anyone say, that's chaff, that is the aluminum-coated fiberglass that is often deployed to jam radar systems. It's a military application.
Yeah, of course, we did. There were two things. One, you know, some people said, you know, brought up chaff. Chaff is very different. You can Google that. Google image that. You can see what that looks like. It's very small, you know, metallic particulates, glittery. These were long strands. The other thing that people suggested as well, there's a phenomenon called a ballooning spider. And that's very true. There, you know, nature's fascinating. And there's a phenomenon where spiders hatch and from their abdomen they spin along webs for transport. And they can hatch in such a way that it gets caught in the jet stream and can go for miles. But here's the thing. It was November 5th. Prescott is a four-season climate. It's cold. It's fall. And the other thing is that I've received many reports now from around the world with people seeing this, including the most compelling, I think, is a woman who lives in Northeast Tennessee, and she's been documenting these for over a year in all seasons, as she said, including below zero. You know, that's not consistent with, you know, the biology of a spider hat. A spider web doesn't contain aluminum, barium, and strontium.
I might suggest here that this military application of these filaments might be modeled after that particular spider.
It could be. It could be the transport vehicle.
That's right.
For something, including, you know, biologicals. You have to be careful. That's why we're testing them, to see if we can see anything. There's also another anti-geoengineering activist who he's pretty well known. His name is Mark McCandlish. He's an aviation expert as well. We had a discussion last week, and he said that he's also seen this, and he saw a document, and I need to ask him to see the document, but he said that in this document, it was a form of geoengineering that was intended to stay aloft for months at a time, for weeks at a time. We can have the classic, you know, running from this side of, you know, the horizon to the other, or that, you know, that spread out rapidly, or that sometimes disperse upward, or, you know, there are so many different manifestations that these aerosols take. But with the frequency of reports of people seeing the web, I wonder if it's a new application, you know, in other words, if it's a concentrated change, some kind of delivery that they're doing. I don't know. It is concerning. It is falling down. It's falling on people and animals and vegetation, and aluminum, barium, and strontium shouldn't fall from the sky on us.
Especially at that altitude, it is very low. If it's supposed to stay up in the sky for weeks at a time, mm-hmm. Why did they deploy it so low over the ground? Corey, there was another interesting response by a school nearby that also noticed these filaments falling out of the air. Tell us about that.
That's right. There was an incident that happened where we received a report that a local school had children. At the time this happened, had children on the playground. The filaments were falling from the sky, so they ushered the children inside very quickly. What's interesting is that the school put two and two together because our local newspaper, the Prescott Daily Courier, did a story, and it was a front page article. And they saw the story and put two and two together. Jeff, what's interesting about the story with the school is that it was just at this time that the EPA and ADEQ and our representative, Paul Gosar's office, were all dismissing this case. And the reason they were dismissing the case, despite receiving our lab report, and despite even admitting that those results were interesting, they said that they were referring to the Channel 5 News report saying that it was cattle bandages and that there was nothing to worry about. So now that we have a report of a school ushering in, you know, their children from recess because of their worry that these filaments were falling on them, we'll be able to take this back to these environmental agencies and say, you know, obviously there is a concern here, and this material fell on children. It is your legal responsibility to investigate this. Because we had a holiday right now, and the school was out, I haven't been able to contact the head of school and, you know, get the facts from the story to report, but I will be doing that at the beginning of the week.
This is great investigative work, great anti-geoengineering activist work. We hope to hear back from you on the results from the biological test from Natural News of those filaments.
Thank you. There's one more thing I would add. We needed a place to collect information, reports, and evidence from other people who maybe, you know, have seen the same thing. And so we did create a Facebook page called Geoengineering/Fallout Evidence.
Geoengineering-Fallout Evidence. Got it.
Correct. And I'll report back anything I hear as we go along.
Well, Corey Gunnels, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m.